Tom Rennie. He has coached many games at many different levels of hockey. And he is now a top Hockey Canada. And he joins us here this morning. Nice to have you back on the show, Tom. Thank you very much for making time. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We were talking about the situation yesterday in Red Deer. I thought it was handled extremely well. Some of our listeners disagree. I thought involving the players in the decision, allowing them the opportunity to choose what happened and the message it sent, I thought that was empowering. What did you think of the way things transpired?
I would have to agree with you. I think, as we come to learn over time, when you've got a team in front of you, your best resource might be those people. And more often than not, it is. And I think giving the opportunity to the players to speak to it provided an opportunity to galvanize as a group and respect the coaching staff and the organization in general.
It wouldn't have always gone down that way, Tom. When did things change? When did players get more of a voice and were allowed to become more active participants?
That's a good question. I can't tell you that it's just appeared on the scene. I can, from personal experience, I think there's been coaches that have always sort of tapped into their leadership group, at least, if not the entire group, which is a smart way to go about it. To make it more front and center, probably, I'm guessing maybe the last 10 years or so. But I'd be remiss if I didn't suggest to you that it's been, a part of a coach's mentality, if you will, and for a long time, maybe not chronicled quite the way it has been in the last decade or so.
Any good coach has taught many a lesson to his players over the years, and we hear the stories, and many of our listeners are sharing some of those this morning. Can you think of an instance that a player taught you something, Tom, where you maybe changed the way you conducted yourself as a coach, and it was because of one example that you learned something and said, you know what, moving forward, I'm going to handle things this way?
It's not one example, but my Vancouver experience, quite honestly. I came to Vancouver having had some reasonable success as a coach, knew who I was in terms of my personality and how I like to communicate, and honor the and respect the player. At the same time, as I say that, I heard them, but I wasn't listening. And I was set in my ways. I knew how I liked to do things. I was, I felt that I was a good person and a reasonable communicator, but I forgot to really pay attention and listen to what the players had for advice for me. And so, to your earlier point, and as much as I thought I had been that all my life up to that point in time, I was taking myself far too seriously as a coach in Vancouver. Didn't allow myself, permit myself to have fun in the job, which I think is a prerequisite. And certainly for the players, you can appreciate how that whole, that whole environment diminished in that sense. So I learned an awful lot by that experience and kind of came back to, what I am as a person and as a coach, and was able to have some reasonable, quote unquote, others may argue, success after that with respect to the Rangers and beyond. But, that was a big part of it, big part of my learning. And it goes on to this very day, to the point where I try to remain humble, empower people, understand that my greatest weaknesses could end up being my greatest strengths, our greatest strengths, if I allow people to emerge and put their best foot forward. And I think that's what's happened.
Tom Rennie is the CEO of Hockey Canada. He joins us this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. And as you share that, Tom, it makes me think of a great quote that I've heard during the course of this pandemic. And a lot of us have listened to a lot of different things or read a lot of different things. And one of the quotes I heard was, do you want to be a knower or do you want to be a learner? And quite often people in authoritative positions think they know everything and have all of the answers. But what it was getting at is that if you ever find yourself at a point where you don't want to learn anymore, then you're failing yourself and you're failing those around you.
Scott, that's bang on. It really and truly is. And by honoring and respecting your surroundings and the people in it, you have nowhere to go but up. And there's a humility and a humanity to being a leader, whether it's in coaching or business or in the philanthropic world, whatever the case may be. I think that that has been sadly missing, up until I would say that last decade. And not to suggest others haven't been a fine example of us for us. But that being said, I think that one of the things that really I think is incumbent with great leaders is the humanity and the humility that's required to do the job, because that's where everybody gets a chance to excel.
and having the courage to look at something that you talked about earlier, your weaknesses. And that's mm-hmm. not just from an individual point of view, that's from an organizational point of view. And look, mm-hmm. this past year for Hockey Canada, for hockey culture, has not been an easy one overall, Tom. You know that as well as anybody else. And mm-hmm. we can cite the different things that have occurred that have caused questions to arise. It's been an mm-hmm. uncomfortable year. What has that process been like looking internally for Hockey Canada?
Fantastic. Not always fun, certainly not easy, as you allude to, but to be able to be introspective as a sport organization, if you will, and how we lend ourselves to the very culture of Canada and Canadians is really important. And, you know, thinking that we do an awful lot right and knowing otherwise is really important. And I think I know where you're going with this, but, you know, the recent elections that we had with our board of directors at Hockey Canada is a fine example of paying attention to what has been brought to our attention and recognizing it's important to do something about that. And it wasn't knee jerk at all. It's been in works for at least a couple of years in any event. But, you know, as you well know, the social fabric of our country has illuminated things like inequities, like maltreatment, you know, like diversity and inclusion. And as much as we like to think we're very good at that, we are not. And we're getting better every day because we've recognized that.
So as that process continues, what conclusions have you come to over the course of the past year of, hey, here's how we can be better, here's where we need to be better?
Well, I think, yep, exactly. Listen to your constituents. Listen to those on the outside, potentially, of your sport or of your endeavor, who have a real good observation position, if you will. You know, and with that, the value of, equity, diversity, inclusion task team and a report that they've just submitted to us was something that we identified with. Recognizing that not everyone is created equal nor approaches their lives the same way. So, gender expression and identity is something that we've paid attention to and have created a task team to help us deal with that. Scott Smith, our president and COO, sits on the NHL Diversity and Inclusion Committee at their invitation and offers up and takes back a ton of great information there. Paying attention to the Hockey Diversity Alliance, and identifying that through many discussions that I've had with them, the maltreatment, anti-racism that's required, be reflective of these discussions and make sure that those discussions are living within our documentation moving forward through policies. All of those things are really helping us, I think, become introspective and recognizing that there's a broad tapestry that we can and must tap into in order to be representative of Canadians through the sport of hockey. And I think we're all quite excited about that, notwithstanding the fact that we're trying to do this in and amongst COVID-19, which certainly throws a wrench in everything, but in no way, shape, or form does it diminish the importance of issues such as what I've just mentioned.
No, and you mentioned the Hockey Diversity Alliance in there. During those conversations, what have you learned?
That they're legitimate, honest, good people that really want badly to make a difference, not just for in terms of Black Lives Matter, but for all those ethnicities and diversities of culture, if you will. I really have learned better how they feel about that, how that group feels about that, how we can be helpful. As I mentioned, we certainly did pay attention to a number of the discussions that we've had, and those discussions are reflective in some of the work groups that we've done and currently have, the task teams that we put together. What we will do internally is Hockey Canada, from coast to coast to coast through ourselves, but through our membership as well. So there's an awful lot there. The dilemma is you can't hit the pause button, even though in fits and starts we're playing hockey across the country. You can't hit the pause button and say, okay, everybody just stop for 6 months and allow us to work on all these things. You've got to do that. While you're working on the highway, you're building it as you're working on it, and it's a challenge for sure. But I think one that we can all look to and identify with as being absolutely essential and something that really can be exciting, because I think there's a revelation, that we've all come to grips with now. And I think there's a movement afoot that allows us to be better, all of us, whether it's in hockey or business, as I mentioned, or philanthropy or whatever it is. We have an opportunity to be really much, much better. And I think it's exciting because as Canadians, I think we do a pretty good job of being citizens of the world. And I don't mean to be too philosophical, but I believe in that wholeheartedly. And I think hockey can help deliver on that.
Tom Rennie joining us here this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. And you mentioned the dilemma of, hey, we can't just press pause. There's also the dilemma of all of the different factions of the organization that Hockey Canada oversees. And, hey, how do we get this message through to someone in Fort McMurray or somebody that's in Trail, British Columbia? There are so many people that you need to have investment from. As you have reached out during the course of the past year and had some of these uncomfortable decisions, what's the feedback been like from all of these different organizations?
Certainly from our members across the country, from British Columbia right to Newfoundland and Labrador, it's been excellent. We've had very, very good communication. When we first started this journey and, after canceling the Women's World Championship and the regular season of hockey and ultimately beyond, we've been in communication with each other across the country almost on a daily basis as we've gone through the process. Identified that maybe once a week is okay, maybe biweekly is okay, but on a regular basis, communication and reporting to and with each other on our calls on what's going on in our various regions, what is working, what isn't, recognizing the value of a couple of very, very important task teams early that identified with the health, safety, and risk of the game right now and returning to hockey, a task team that had performed a regulatory review as to what the return to hockey needed to look like, identifying also with task teams and coaching and officiating that with whatever the game looked like coming back, that needed to be somewhat different and flexible. So all of those very, very important. And then with the common denominator across the whole spectrum of identifying with the public health authority, the relevant public health authority in your jurisdiction, whether it was Trail BC or BC Hockey, whether it was St. John's or Hockey Newfoundland. The bottom line is that we all had to identify with the relevant health authority and use that as our North Star and then share some more on, how things were going, what was working, what wasn't, recognizing that being first didn't mean anything, being right meant everything, and so we'll continue to work on that. We were very, very clear that rolling out the return to hockey didn't mean everyone would start at the same time, exactly the same way, but we had to make sure that health and safety of the participants was first and foremost in everyone's mind and paying a close attention to what the relevant health authority was determining for us. So with that beacon, with that North Star, we've been able to maintain a real positive approach. It's not been without its challenges. It's not been without the challenge of the general public, wanting to do more, faster, more often. But at the end of the day, we needed to make sure that we had a strategy so that when we came back, it allowed everyone to get reacquainted with the game, recognizing that over time, what we needed to have in place was sustainable, would stand the test of time, and allow us to get back to a new normal, if you will, within the hockey fraternity.
Well, and quite frankly, if the culture of hockey and everything around it is going to improve, and we all should be hoping for that, I know you're on board with that, you need the general public, because the general public are the ones that enroll their kids or they volunteer and they are around these organizations. They don't always have the same type of contact that some of the decision makers in these associations do with Hockey Canada, but they are some of the people and the people you need, quite frankly, to hold these standards up and to help accountability. What mechanisms are there in place for accountability throughout the country?
Well, again, that it certainly, as a national sport organization, we provide an awful lot of oversight there when it comes to the Constitution, bylaws, regulations, rules, if you will. I guess, Scott, you've got to allow the member branches the latitude to do their business. Hockey Canada can make all kinds of assumptions and impart their will vis-a-vis the Little Red Book. And yet at the same time, we have to respect the fact that those that are closest to it know best of it. And, so recognizing that we do have a book of constitution and regulations that are applied on a regular basis, we also have to recognize that minor hockey association in Timmins, Ontario, who reports to, the member therein, HNO, Hockey Northern Ontario, that is the ultimate relationship. That is the key relationship right there. And with what we have at Hockey Canada in our member engagement department, led by Darren Cossar and five regional directors, there's a real good conduit between ourselves, between the member branches across the country, and the minor hockey associations, probably better than ever before, I would hazard a guess. Certainly in the 6 years that I've been here, one of the key strategic plans put together was to include this group here to deliver on that relationship. And that's helped an awful lot. And then, beyond that, we just have to recognize that, the minor hockey association has to fall within a certain jurisdiction. That jurisdiction has to fall within a certain set of guidelines, rules, regulations, if you will, but also recognize that no one has their finger on the pulse better than those people. We can guess our way through whatever we want. At the end of the day, the rules and regulations are there to protect the integrity of the game, yes, but to also protect individuals, all individuals, down to the lowest common denominator, so that they can enjoy the game for a lifetime.
Well, and as we've talked about throughout the course of this conversation, this is an ongoing process. This isn't, hey, we've got all the answers and everything's perfect now, let's proceed. This is an evolution, just like the rest of life is. I know you believe throughout the course of this interview, you've indicated that progress has been made across this country and with Hockey Canada in the last year. What are you most proud of in that regard?
There's a lot to be proud of. There's no question about that. I think, number one, I'm proud of the fact that we owned our stuff. We haven't got the secret sauce. We haven't done everything right. We've not been afraid to ask questions. We've not been afraid to be put out and held accountable. And we've responded to that as best we possibly can, and we'll continue to. There's an awful lot of work to do yet. So I'm certainly proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that, even though it looks as though we responded to public opinion and constituents that had called us out with respect to diversity on our board, this has been years in the making. And I have to give Michael Brendamore, our chair of the board of Hockey Canada, the previous board to what now exists, all kinds of credit for recognizing that, and determining through a bylaw change that on our board of directors we needed at least two females and two males. So that's only four, of which there are nine in total. And, what we've been able to do that is open the door to diversity in general, and not just both genders. Beyond that, and we now have, a board member that has an Indigenous heritage. We now have an Indo-Canadian on our board of directors. We have five new directors on the board. So to show that diversity and I think the point of view to be working on it before it became public knowledge, but recognizing that we need to own that as well and get better through this, I think is critical. You look at, I think we had over 200 individuals express an interest in running for the board of Hockey Canada. To me, that suggests that Hockey Canada is a desired destination for volunteer leadership, and with a desire to grow and improve on the game. And we need to listen to this board, and we need to listen to our constituents, as you mentioned earlier. And so I'm proud of the fact that we're open. I'm proud of the fact that we have left ourselves vulnerable, and I'm proud of the fact that we've made it very clear that we haven't got the secret sauce, but we very much want to be part of the solution, to sport and citizenship participation in general through the game of hockey. There's lots to be proud of. Right now, I don't want to get too much into the weeds here, but I want to suggest that we know what we've been less inadequate at, and we're working at it.
And that's great, and we generally don't get to see that. You have to live it on a day-to-day basis and really have the rubber meet the road there. What we do see, of course, is our national teams representing this country. How great a challenge has this been and will continue to be pulling off the World Juniors in Edmonton this year?
Well, an extremely sad casualty to this whole national team event and our program of excellence was the cancellation of the Women's World Championship in Halifax and Truro. The ancillary work that was evolving around that event was fantastic, for female leadership, for identifying, a gender that has much more to offer and to give than what maybe has been provided in the past. And with the cancellation of that event, a real sad loss, but we're working hard to make sure that through a successful World Junior Championship, we can identify with the same outcome we hope in April in Halifax and Truro again for the Women's World Championship. So it's been a challenge. And, the World Junior Championship has been an extreme challenge. We've had to make some workforce adjustments with respect to the numbers of people that work at Hockey Canada. So there's an awful lot of work falling on even fewer people. But what we've done everything we can to identify with the federal health authority, the provincial health authority in the Edmonton region health authority. We've done everything we can to check all the boxes, and we continue to. And we're working very, very hard at that. It would be a shame not to see that come through, and allow the population of Canadians to just identify with hockey again and feel real good about watching that and about being Canadian. But at the end of the day, somebody else will make that decision, and it'll be the health authority, and we'll have to live with that, and that's life.
Yeah, and we're all living that right now. I think we all can understand that with the way restrictions have been put in place and ramped up in some cases across this country. Tom, I appreciate the availability, the accessibility, and the accountability here today. Thank you very much for your time, and all the best to you and your family moving forward.
Scotty, same to you, and thanks for the time today, and the very best to you and your family.